It's 8:04, July 12th, Thursday, and you're listening to 9 to 5, and this is Lou speaking. This is the program where we talk to people who are currently employed, gainfully employed, we hope, and some use technology and some use other talents at their disposal. Now, if we should have a difficulty tonight and we get the gremlins approach us and knock us off, please hit F5 and that will restore you to the room. In the world of music, there are many musicians, many performers, and in the world of music today, there are many people with technical facility to record, to mix, to produce. Rarely do you find a person who can write songs, perform songs, but also record songs, mix songs, and produce them. And tonight's guest is one of those people who has several talents, God-given talents, and some technical skills he's acquired along the way because he's had to acquire them. My guest tonight is Chris Bell. You probably have heard him on the site. You may have heard his music on ACB Radio, where it's played often and very well. And Chris Bell is a man who has the ability, has the gift of song, the gift of melody. If you've ever heard his music, and you will hear some samples of it tonight, you'll know what I'm talking about. He has that ability to write a song and carry that melody throughout it, throughout that song, with interesting sidelights on that tune. He also sings in a nice baritone voice, and you'll hear that, I hope, but if not, you'll at least hear his music. Chris, are you there?
Yes, I am, Lou, and it's really good to be here.
Thanks for coming on, and thanks for bringing your CD player, which we'll hear later, some of your songs. Chris, I guess, you know, every interviewer has a kind of formula that he uses. I try not to become formulaic, but we'd like to know something about the person behind the name, the person behind the talent, the person behind the skill. And if you would indulge me a little bit, bear with me, tell us a little something about yourself. I know that you were the child of a military family and that you did a lot of traveling. Where have you been and where are you now?
Well, I was born in Santa Ana, California, in Orange County in 1963, and that would make me 38 now. Oh, my God. And Dad was a Marine, so we've lived in Jacksonville, Florida. We've lived different places in Texas. When Dad retired in 70, we ended up settling in Texas, and that's where I've lived most of my life. And for the last, since about 85, 86, we'll say early mid-80s, I've been here in Cape Girardeau, Missouri, which is a little town about an hour south of St. Louis down here on the Mississippi River. But I have never been out of the country, but I've been in quite a few of the states, and because of traveling with the family and because of different musical aspects and moving around bands, etc. Other than going out for road trips and such, I've been fairly stationary. I've called Cape Girardeau my home for the last 12 years or so.
Now, did you attend public schools or did you go to a school for the blind, Chris?
I went to public school. What happened was in California, I attended kindergarten, and since my kindergarten and first grade years, even though I made straight A's, were broken up so much, they started me over in the Garland Independent School District. Garland, Texas is where our family settled. That's a suburb north of Dallas. And I stayed in that school district all through high school.
Okay, that's good. Now, you have an ability to play and to write and play music, and many people have that ability. Some discover that talent early on, some discover it later. When did you discover that you had musical ability?
Well, you know, I was a typical little kid that got made to take piano lessons, and I liked it all right. I thought it was, it was a fun thing, and people made a fuss about it, but I sort of, in the early years, I sort of rebelled against it. I really didn't, you know, Dad always told me, you know, son, this is going to be your bread and butter. And I sort of, of course, I was classically trained, and I fought it. I didn't really think of myself as being that talented. It's when you have something, I guess, if you have any kind of innate ability, you tend to take it for granted. It's sort of like eating or sleeping or breathing. And I never considered myself to be exceptional in any way. I was just a kid, and I didn't really like to be made to do anything, you know, in a disciplined mode, as it were. So, but I didn't really start really loving music. Well, I've always loved music, but I didn't start really applying myself till I got, when I was a teenager, the hot guitar player of the day was Eddie Van Halen, the hot groups were Led Zeppelin and Foreigner and Grand Funk, all those 70s and 80s groups, and I just I started playing in garage bands, and that's when I picked up the love for music, and I wanted to learn to play guitar because guitar was a cool instrument. You could turn up the amp real loud and make everybody mad and get feedback, so I learned to play piano as a kid, and then in my teenage years I learned to play guitar. And the music thing has kind of been a growing thing with me. I've pinned tunes here and there, but I didn't. It seems like each little thing has kind of added itself as I've gone along. In my 20s, I started singing more, and then I learned to play harmonica. And you know, I don't know where it's gonna go because. There was no way that I could have graduated by doing just what I'm doing now. And I've been a lot of places as far as the music. I haven't made it real big, but I've been places where I've done pretty well with it, and then I've been places where it's like, well, let's scrape the beans off the bottom of the pot. So it's been a crazy ride for me.
Now, you played, as they say, by ear, but you said you were classically trained, so you can read music, and I suppose you can write it. And you knew early on that you had perfect pitch. Is that right?
Well, I don't read music, and I don't write music. I decided to use my fingers because my ears hurt when I tried to play with them. Just kidding. I could always tell pitches. Someone hit a note. I could always tell what they were, and always had pretty good timing. But as far as reading, I took one music theory class in school, but I never really studied music in school. Surprisingly enough, other than one theory class, and I wasn't really in choir or band in school. I didn't pursue the formalized training, as it were. I went the other route. I went with playing in garage bands, and I wanted to rock and roll. I didn't want to go by the prescribed method.
think going into garage bands and pickup bands as a teenager, that was a way that you could integrate with the larger sighted community, that was a way into gaining an identity, getting people to treat you as an equal?
Most definitely. Everybody likes musicians, at least for a while they do. So it was kind of my way of screaming in the dark and say, here I am. It was my way to make some noise and get noticed and be a part of something bigger than myself, I guess. I guess that's what we're all doing to a certain point, because because of different things in our family and everything, I've always been kind of a lone wolf in a lot of ways, but I guess music was my way of inserting myself someplace.
Inserting yourself and connecting with other people. Now, after you left high school, what did you do then, Chris?
Well, I got out of the house for the first time when I was 19 years old, and I went to Austin, Texas, to a place called Crisco Rehab. And basically, we were all a bunch of wild kids away from home for the first time, and that was one of those magic summers. We partied, and we partied, and we partied. I fell in love for the first time, and the one and only time I've had a regular day-type job, I worked at the Lighthouse for the Blind in Austin and also attended a college class. I've had a couple of, all the state agencies and everything always wanted me to pursue middle of the road, academic, sort of respectable as you were type of job, because I did well on my SAT tests I wasn't exactly a brain, but I graduated in the 50th out of 462 in my class and basically screwed off the last 2 years of high school. You know, I was doing the things that a retro hippie does, and you can draw your own conclusions there. I was more interested in having fun and leading the life of a wandering minstrel with all that goes along with it. So I was in Austin, and basically what it boils down to is I tried a couple of different things, but it seemed like I always came back to music. I guess the hallowed halls of academia weren't really for me.
I see. The academic life you certainly weren't interested in. Occasionally on this show, I ask a question or two. Might be a little too personal, and I always say to my guests, you don't have to answer that. There's nothing compelling you to answer that question. Well, I guess I have one of those questions right now. And how much did alcohol and drugs play in your early life?
Well, I don't mind answering any questions. Shoot, you know, we're all human beings, and you know, everybody's got flaws and strengths. I'll say that they never got a hold of my life, but yeah, I dabbled with a lot of different things. I mean, I did my share of partying, and I never had a real problem with it. Actually, this is funny. I was at Arkansas Enterprises for the Blind. Some of you might have caught, you know, some of us with marijuana, actually. And I thought I was going to go to jail. It was like, well, I'm busted. And well, they called me in the office, and they said, well, you guys, it's necessary to do a room search from time to time. And I said, well, you caught me. You know, I'm not going to lie about it. And I don't know. It's a hard draw. I would never tell anybody that drugs and alcohol are a good thing. But I think a lot of those kind of choices depend on the person. Some people, it gets a hold of their life and messes them up completely, and some people can slide through it and it not mess with them too bad. But it was a part of the culture of the working musicians. I mean, it's always been. I mean, you've heard about these stars and lesser musicians and the messes they make of their lives and the different things they go through, the relationship things. And I guess I've skated around all that, but I'm here today, and these days I'm pretty clean, because you can't maintain that kind of crazy lifestyle and state without completely falling apart. Your body can't handle it, your mind can't handle it. So you have to grow up sometime and sort of the middle of the road and kind of stay there. But yeah, I won't say it was a huge influence, but it was definitely a part of what was going on, and a lot of us had way more fun than we were supposed to and thumbed our nose at the law, as it were.
Well, I understand your position that it was part of the culture, and it still is. And I think I'm not in error. Like, playing music was a way of integrating with the larger society. The drugs and the alcohol was another way of relating to your contemporaries, the kids you knew, the people you knew at that time. I guess a lot of people have used those things to relax them and to be accepted by the larger group. Now, Chris, we'll try to stay away from those areas in future, but thank you for answering sincerely and honestly. I appreciate it. I mean, the audience does too. Now, you said in your 20s and even into your 30s, the music began to become more and more part of your life. Other things didn't seem to interest you as much, and you had this talent. When did you start working professionally as a musician?
Well, ever since in my early 20s, I've been playing in bar bands. You know how I got down here to Missouri? I needed a gig, and this band that was a young band needed a keyboard player. I was playing at the VFW, and I guess it was Garland. And I wasn't home a lot. I'd gone back home from Austin and then Arkansas Enterprise, sort of blind to attend school. But I was popping here and there. You know, I'd stay 2, 3, 4 days with this girl or that girl, and you know, I'd come home, you know, get showered and cleaned up and leave the house again. I'd stay with one of the band guys or whatever band I was playing with. And I was at the VFW back in some country band, and they heard me play, and they said, yeah, you know, we need a keyboard player. I said, okay, I want to get out of town. So I packed my duffel bag and my keyboards and guitars and stuff, and I went to Missouri. And it's crazy. We were six kids with, you know, crazy ideas about being stars. We had a reconverted school bus. We went on road trips and slept in the back on mattresses. With our PA in the back, and we all all good grief. But as far as, I guess that's when it all started, because we you could make a demo tape and give it to a booking agency, and they'd book you, and you could play the big. In the 80s, I played a lot of country, and then when I was in Cape Girardeau, I met up with this guy named Lou Hobbs, and I got on this TV show, and God, it would take hours and hours and hours to tell you all the different band situations and different types of working arrangement and things that I've had. But it's been a steadily growing process, and you know, and as the years went by, I started using more technology and integrating basically climbing the ladder up a little bit, as it were, because I never, I don't know, I guess I'm like a lot of musicians. We tend to be terrible business people. We like to have fun, you know. But I'll tell you what, I've managed to buy a house, and I've managed to not owe anybody any money, and I've managed to keep body and soul together playing music. So I may never make a million, but, you know, it beats the heck out of digging a ditch. And, you know, some weeks big winter and some weeks no dinner. So there hasn't been a predictable path. It's more like being a winding road with a lot of different kinds of situations. As far as, you know, I've played with a lot of different people, and I've been in a lot of situations.
Well, I can certainly picture the itinerant life you've led, but while you're going up and down these bypaths and byways, you are learning your craft. You are learning some production. You are learning something about recording. When did you start really getting into the production and recording end of it and using computers? That was quite a leap. Was that cumulative? Did it grow on you, or did you decide, you know, at one point to say, "Listen, I've got to get a hold of this technology"? Tell us about that.
Well, in 1992, later part of 91-92, I called the RSB, which is the Commission for the Blind here in Missouri, and I'd messed with sequencing and a little bit of that before, but strictly from using hardware-based sequencers with the help of a sighted friend. Basically, I'd play the parts and he ran the sequencer. But I knew that computer-based sequencing and music creation was possible, and this was back in the good old DOS days. And I feel sorry for anybody that's never had the pleasure of using a computer that actually doesn't crash all the time, and that you don't have to reformat the hard drive every 3 months. They got me this blind guy in St. Louis to come down. He trained me for a week on my first machine was a 386, 25 megahertz 386 with a 40 meg hard drive. My God, can you believe it? And then he left me with this monster. So I got my DOS manuals and I got my, everything I could get my hands on, and I was using a program called Sequencer Plus from Voyetra, which is a marvelous. I still use that program to this day. And it was a basic sequencing package where you could use a synthesizer and you could create music with a synthesizer. And I think I've been doomed from that day on. I spent hours and hours with that thing learning what I could do. And I mean, it was like, and that's what spawned me working by myself, because I got married in 95, and then I kind of quit playing in bands because I had my band in a box with me. I had all these tracks that I'd programmed, and I had a wife that could drive, and so I ran around this part of the country and made a whole lot of money during that time and had a good time. I did as well by myself as a lot of bands do. And I sounded better than they did. I play keys and guitar and blow a little harp and sing maybe that didn't have all the harmonies and everything, but I could make a big sound by myself and as far as the studio aspect of things, I met this guy named Tim Cagle, and then he's been in and out of Nashville and Branson, and until the early part of this year, he owned the studio in town, and he basically allowed me to create my own job in there. The thing is, there is a whole big market full of semi-talented people or people that love music but maybe can't play. And you got people that aren't really talented but just insist on doing it anyway. The churches are full of them. The world is full of them. Why do you think karaoke is so big? And please don't think I'm being arrogant. But, you know, I'm not being arrogant, but I'm just saying that a lot of people love music and a lot of people are willing to pay, you know, money to people to create tracks for them. And they can pay me to do something a whole lot easier than they could pay four or five guys to come in and try to create a track in real time. And Tim basically he let me... They got me a computer, and they bought a speech synthesizer for it, and I basically set up the MIDI room at Riverside Recording, which I'm not working with those guys anymore because they're, me and that same guy are in another situation. I'm currently working in, like, three different bands. But basically, from about 95 on to the early part of last year, a whole lot of music was created down at Riverside Recording, and I was in the middle of 80 or 90% of it. And, I tell you what, I learned a lot. That guy taught me a lot about recording. Now, he's pretty much country. That's his forte. But I cut my teeth on a lot of different musical forms. Country was the first music I learned to like, but I really liked the blues and old school black music. Ronnie Millsap and Stevie Wonder are both. There are two idols of mine. I like all kinds of music, and I've done session work for everything from country guys to rap guys to classic rock guys. But I guess my heart's kind of in the old style R&B and anything that's sexy, that's got a good beat to it, that's got powerful vocals. You know, I'm definitely old school in a lot of ways, but I like everything. And we, predominantly in this country, we did a lot of Southern gospel tracks and a lot of, like, what I call oatmeal type stuff. Nice. And I've got to work with some pretty, you know, with some people that have made it nationally. I mean, groups like the Gabriels and Chrissy Swinford, she's been on the charts. I might play you a track of hers later, but I tell you, that studio, being in the studio is totally different than being on stage because you got to get right. You can't, there's no room for error, and what you can get away with, in a room full of drunks that are screaming and hollering and lying to each other is totally different than what happens in the control room. When you can hear an ant ask gas. So, I mean, you gotta have your ducks in a row, and then when you're on the clock, of course, we ran things a pretty relaxed way a lot of times because I took a lot of the work home with me for programming, then we weren't on the clock or anything. But I tell you, I've grown the most musically in the last 5 years since I've gotten into the studio into things more.
Well, when you worked for Riverside, that's when you really got into the, you call it sequencing, I guess for most people we'd call it multi-tracking, right? You got into production, you got into mixing down the tracks, getting the sound you want, and all of that, so you really became quite an expert at that in the last 5 or 6 years. Now, you also run a little sideline. I'll mention this. I don't want you to talk about it unless you really want to. You run a sideline where you can restore old records and tapes, clean them up, take the clicks and pops out, and present them on a CD for a fee, and you still do that, do you not?
Yeah, that's one of the pies I stuck my finger in, and that takes a lot of time to do right, but I enjoy doing that. It's one of the things I do.
Now, you've also done, you said you did some TV work, you did some radio work, and you've also produced, created and produced some commercials for radio stations, and you're still doing that now. Would you say something about that?
Yeah, well, mostly my part of it is has to do with creating tracks for people, you know, like spots, musical spots. Surprisingly, I haven't kept a lot of that stuff around because, God, you go in, you do a session, and you don't get a tape of every session you do. Otherwise, you'd be swimming in them. But yeah, I've done, you know, I can turn on the radio around here, and I can hear one of my radio spots every now and then. Like, I did a reggae-type thing for a Healthy Start, which has to do with Give Your Baby a Healthy Start, which is from St. Francis. They play that on the Soul station here, the station that plays, like, rap and, you know, hip-hop and modern R&B. And then We've done some different commercials, but the lion's share of what I've done in the studio has to do with creating tracks for people. And I like a correction, as it were. Sequencing is a part multi-tracking. Sequencing and multi-tracking are a little different. Sequencing is a form of multi-tracking, but it's not multi-tracking in the strict sense because you're not actually recording. You're recording MIDI data, which controls the synthesizer. But it's not actually recording per se, but it is definitely related. I mean, it's part of, I guess in the strictest sense, it's a form of multi-tracking, but they are different things.
Well, thanks for that correction. I needed that. I think we've reached a point, Chris, where we've had enough talking. We want some examples. And while you queue up something, I'll do a little fill here. So I won't be asking anything here in a minute or two. You can move away from the computer and get something keyed up. I want to say also while he's getting something ready that Chris is heard quite often on ACB radio one of their streams, sound streams, I guess, cafe stream, if any of you are familiar with that. His music is played there. He composed and produced the theme song for Marlena Lieberg's Blind Spot. I think that's what it's called. I'm not sure what the program's name is. I guess it's Blind Spot. And he's done some other things with ACB Radio, and as he already described, he's done commercials for public service announcements, and we're going to talk about how he conceives of these musical ideas and then how he executes them after we hear a couple examples of something. Do you have anything ready for us, Chris?
Yeah, I do. I'm going to play a cover tune here. This is a fun song, and it's been done by a lot of people. It's kind of an old blues standard. And I've got a little harmonica, a little slide guitar work on it, little keyboard, and I just had fun with this song. I'm in kind of a lighthearted mood.
Why don't you let us hear it?
Well, this is my version of an oldie but a goodie. Here you go.
Crying
Anyway, that's Chris Bell having fun.
Okay, that was great, Chris. Now, let's just take it apart a little bit. We're not going to dissect it. We don't have a butcher knife here or a cleaver. But tell us something about how that was done. You laid down the bass and drum. Which comes first, the drum track, then the bass track, and then all the others are layered on top of that? And then the voice was last? Is that how it was done? Tell us how that was done.
You know, they're all a little bit different. Usually I'll start with a click track of some kind. And sometimes I'll lay a keyboard track first, like I've got piano and I've got brass. And sometimes I work track by track, and sometimes I go linearly. Sometimes I'll do part of the drum track and I'll get bored with it, and I'll say, now I'm going to lay part of a bass line and do that. But anyway, I wasn't going to put that song on the album, but it was kind of like, I just wanted a jam song on there. And so that was one of the quickest tunes on the album. You can see that was just, you know, it's a good tight track, but it wasn't, you know, it's not like, it's not like it took a whole lot of time to do. I just had a good time. But yeah, I played some harmonica on there, and I played the harmonica through my distortion box so I could get that grungy, nasty sound that I like. I like it when they have that real raunchy, you know, when they used to play the harmonicas and the B3s and everything through the distortion boxes, and it just gives it that mean, nasty sound. And then I will throw in some slide guitar. Now, this was after the MIDI track was all done, but. And I was learning to use Cakewalk and different stuff like that at the time. You see, most about all my CD was done right here at home because I want to do it myself. You know, a lot of people will buy canned tracks and do this and have studio musicians, but I wanted to do it myself because I knew all the parts would be the way that I liked them. I wanted them. I guess, you know. I've worked with a few musicians in my life that could kind of read my mind and knew, you know, that we could work together. And sometimes you get a better, like I'm gonna play a duet here in a little bit from one of my clients that I worked with, and she's just awesome. And then it was a really rewarding experience working for her because I got to do a lot of different kinds of things or whatever. I did a duet with her, and she's got it on her album, and I've got it on mine. But that was just a fun song. I just threw it together and went with it, and it was just one of those songs that I've done forever and ever. It's not terribly complex. It's just a lot of fun. It's got a good beat, and people love to dance to it.
I think all of that came through in the example you played. Why don't you play this next one? You have something else keyed up that you could roll with? We could talk about it after we listen to it.
Sure. I will.
Oh, never be the one to turn the tide, to change roots. In my life, I believe that I'm a father. Your eyes, I can see beyond the marble. I can see forever in your eyes. I can be anything I want, anything at all in your eyes. I can see everything so clear, everything the way it should be.
That was very nice, Chris. Do you want to? That's a song you wrote. And did you arrange it, or did you help arrange it? And was that key modulation, those change of keys, is that your idea? Move from key to key there. You made a couple key changes. So what observations do you want to make about that particular piece? We lost Chris. Hey, Chris?
It helps to turn the microphone on. Here I am. Sorry
about
that.
You're the technology guy. We'll excuse it. Do you have any observations about that particular cut?
Well, actually, that tune came from Tree Publishing in Nashville, and we took some liberties with it. We changed, like, we're always doing stuff like that. When we get songs to work with, we always do different stuff to, like a ballad turned into a hip-hop tune. And actually, on my CD that I have here, I've got mostly cover tunes on it. I've got three or four originals on it. I've got a blues original, and then actually, it was supposed to be two CDs, but what happened was is I decided to put them all together and make a big 17-track CD, and the first part of it is like club songs and stuff I've done forever, and the last part of it is like Christian cuts and stuff like that. And most of the original stuff is on the Christian part of the album, but because, you know, I wanted to, I didn't even thought of a big and give people a lot of stuff to kind of combine the two endeavors, and it's worked out pretty well for me. But that song there, though, that got some airplay around here, and I'm real glad she, you know, they really, we did a lot of work for those guys, and they that was kind of like their thank you gift for me. Ever saying, yeah, you know, I asked them if I could use that song on my album because I really enjoyed cutting that with Chrissy, and she was only 19 years old at the time, and it was like, sure. So that's where that cut came from, and we just did it our way.
It has a very professional commercial sound to it, and I thought it was very, very smooth, and good words too. Could you give us one more example of your work, and then we're going to have to move on. We're kind of running a little short of time at this point. If you could cue up something, and maybe not let it run the whole thing, if you don't mind. I know musicians hate that, but it's like editing someone's novel. But if you could just cue up one more thing, I'd appreciate it, and I think the audience would enjoy hearing it.
There you go. There's my rendition of a Sunday school classic.
That was well done, Chris. That's one that you played all the instruments on, like the others. You sang on it. But it's not a song you wrote, right?
Oh, no. No, that's in the public domain. Yeah, I did a, let's see, that's got a 4 tracks of acoustic guitar on it. That's got electric guitar, drums, some keyboard work. That's got a triple track vocals. I did three and four part harmony on it, double track. So that's how I got that big fat Eagles, Crosby, Stills, and Nash, Eric Clapton. I don't know. That's almost like a white version of a cross between an Eric Clapton style and maybe a little Boys to Men. It's got that kind of sway to it. And I wanted, I don't know, I just, It started off as kind of a joke. Well, not a joke, but you know, it started off as like, I'd just gotten Cakewalk, and I wanted to see how many tracks I could lay down, so I grabbed the acoustic, and I started singing to it, and it was just like, it was like, hey, this is all right. And then when I got done with it, people said, hey, you need to stick that on the end of your album. This is when the CD was going to be just an 11-song CD, because it's like, you know, it's song number 11 on there, and it was like, hey, I think I will. You know, it was just one of those things that ended up being a lot more, you know, than it was originally, because it started off just being a test project, just so I could learn my way around this new piece of software I got back in 1996.
Someone would like to purchase your CD. How would they go about doing it?
Send me the money, honey. I'll send you a CD. You can reach me at Cbell, C-B-E-L-L-E, at iGateway, that's iGateway.net, or I'll repeat that. That's Charlie Bravo Echo Lima Lima Echo, Cbell, at iGateway, that's India Golf Alpha Tango Echo, SkiAlphaYankee.net. $15, that includes shipping, and you'll get you a CD. So that's how I've been doing it. I haven't got them advertised anywhere or anything. Jennifer's been on my case about doing that, but I haven't really. I sell them. Okay, I'm in like a show band and a bar band and different things. I carry some with me when I play out and stuff, and I sell a few here and there, but I've been kind of just selling them like that.
That's fine, and I think if people are interested, they'll send you the money and get a good-sounding CD. What I'm going to do now, Chris, is I want to thank you for coming on, going through all the rigmarole of getting that queued up and set up and thinking about it. And I particularly want to thank you about being sincere and revealing yourself for the man you are. You didn't exaggerate. You didn't dissemble. You didn't evade. You gave, I think, a true picture of yourself and your music. I think we all thank you for that. It was well done. It was a pleasure having you on. And I think because of these time constraints, I'm going to say that that's it for 9 to 5. But if we can run over, my recording engineer will permit it, I'd like to still let the audience ask any questions they have, ask you any questions they might have thought of during the interview or that I didn't think of or I didn't pursue or I just, you know, flubbed up. So if anyone has a question for Chris, would you mind answering a few questions from the audience, Chris?
I don't mind at all. I got all the time. I got more time than sense. I can hang out and answer questions. It don't bother me at all. And I'll tell you, it's been a pleasure to be here. And, well, you know, I am who I am, whatever that is. I'm still trying to figure out exactly what that is. I've learned some hard lessons along the way, and some lessons it seems like we have to learn over and over again. But, you know, I'm just a blind boy living on this big bowl of mud and doing the best I can. That's what I am. And it's,
oh, I think your music is honest, and that's the way you are, honest, And I appreciate you coming on. Does someone have a question for Chris?
I don't have a question, but I want to thank Chris for coming tonight and also for the gift of his music. I am truly a Chris Bell fan. Absolutely love his music. And I also think everyone ought to be lucky enough to own one of his albums. And if you'd missed his address and need some contact info from his kids, write to me, because I'd love to help this poor boy sell some music.
Well, it's 9:03. It's just about an hour since we began. So I did keep my word. Almost. 3 minutes over. Does someone have a question for Chris?
Chris, I do.
Fire away, partner. What's on your mind?
Chris, you come on here with a nickname of long-haired songster. Is that because of earning, forget the correct terminology, but your upper brow of music, or is it because you have long hair?
It's both. I do have long hair. It's down to the middle of my back now. I look like an Indian. My mother was full-blood Japanese, and on my grandma's side, we got Choctaw. She was full-blood Choctaw, so I wear my hair long, and it's black, almost black. With of course, that doesn't mean being blind people, but it's for me, if I have blind listeners and saucer world. Well, I'm a songster, and I got long hair, so that's kind of just the nick that I've kind of chosen to use. Lately, I guess. I've used a lot of different nicks. That's kind of that's my latest favorite.
So then it's highbrow music, and that you more or less were trained in the beginning, plus the fact you do have long hair.
Oh, I wouldn't call my music highbrow. I actually think it's pretty simple and earthy and down home, like me. You know, it don't come no more homemade than me.
Can you say in the beginning that you were being taught the highbrow stuff?
Yeah, but I kind of rebelled against that. Basically, when I had made practice some scales and stuff, because it trained my ear and it got my, it got me some early roots that I needed. But I'm more at home in a smoky blues club than I am at Carnegie Hall, you know, or a piano recital. Put me in a dark blues bar with a bunch of pretty girls, a dimly lit dance floor. Put me on stage with a guitar in my hand or working a synth or an organ and I'm at home. Well, that's where I belong.
Okay, thanks.
Someone else have a question for Chris?
Yeah, I'm sorry. That's okay. I just wanted to, again, thank Chris for coming on. It was great. I sure enjoyed it, and kind of sound like me in my younger years, Chris. Well, that's just a couple years ago, but anyway. And you should have something in the mail. Either maybe I already got it by now, but looking forward to getting a CD.
Thanks, Terry. Someone else have a question?
Appreciate it, Terry.
Chris Byron and I have a couple of your CDs, and I'm really enjoy it, by the way. I was kind of surprised to see an old gospel song on there that you go to a church these days and you find very few people that even know the song. But if the other people don't really mind, could you play just a little bit of I'll Fly Away?
Sure, why not? I will. Coming up.
Yoo-hoo.
Let me find it. There we go.
Over, I'm fighting again.